Good morning. It's time for The Ship Report, the show about all things maritime. I'm Joanne Rideout. I'm here in the studio today for a special ship report in honor of our membership drive. I'm having live guests this week coming in to talk about various things. And my guest today is geologist Tom Horning. Morning, Tom.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here. So we're going to talk for 10 minutes about geology of the coast. Now, geology is one of those subjects that maybe you took in school and maybe didn't think about a whole lot afterwards if you didn't become a geologist. But geology here in this area of the coast seems to be a very active science, isn't it? I mean, there's geology happening all around us.
It's going on all the time. Yep.
And so you are a consultant. You have your own environmental consulting company called Horning Geosciences, right?
That's correct.
So so this is really your work, is looking at the geology of our area. So one of the things I wanted to start out with is sort of a combination maritime emergency question, and that is that in the news lately on the southern Oregon coast, we have seen some pretty big earthquakes happening out in the ocean in a place where it sort of strikes terror into the heart of a lot of folks who live here on the coast because we've been warned so often about the big one. And none of these earthquakes that have happened near Coos Bay have done that. So could we talk a little bit about those quakes and where they're happening?
Sure. They're on the Blanco Fault Zone, which runs northwesterly across the seafloor, a good 200 to 300 miles offshore. And they are part of a transform fault system, which is like the San Andreas. It's a strike-slip fault where opposite sides of the faults move horizontally past each other. And they do this because the plate itself isn't just perfectly flat. It has to lie on the curvature of the earth. And so to accommodate that curvature, the slab breaks into a series of transform faults, which allow the slices to slide past each other.
So what does that term transform fault mean?
Well, it's just a name somebody came up with to distinguish this particular kind of fault. At each end of the transform fault is a spreading center, which is where young volcanoes are creating new seafloor as the opposite sides of the seafloor move away from each other. Some is headed for Japan, some is headed for the Pacific Northwest.
Okay. And so from what I understand, part of the reason why these particular earthquakes have not caused any tsunami activity is that the movement is generally horizontal and not vertical?
That's right. If you don't lift the ocean or drop it, you can't make a tsunami.
Okay. And so so how does that compare to the fearsome Cascadia subduction zone that we've heard so much about?
I'd describe it as just background noise that really does not portend any particular rupture of the subduction zone. These have been going on for the longest time. We have records of them going back to the 50s at least, and they repeat themselves, but nothing happens as a result. When it finally does hit, when the subduction zone lets go, we'll maybe be able to see a pattern, but there's nothing that stands out.
And so what does that term subduction mean in this case? I mean, it's a different kind of a fault.
Yes, it's a thrust fault where basically the seafloor is sliding underneath Oregon and Washington at a very gentle angle. It's about 15 degrees. So it takes a long time for that subducting slab to get down into the hot part of the planet. So everything is cold and locked and brittle from basically the toe of the continental slope to about halfway into the coast range. And that's about 100 to 120 miles. So that's a large surface area to lock up, and it can store a lot of elastic energy for centuries before it finally lets go.
And so that's really the technical explanation of the fact that the big one, as we've all heard of, it's going to happen at some point, but we can't predict when.
That's pretty hard.
Yeah. Well, so then people don't really have to, well, I mean, in the sense of people don't have to worry that those particular quakes are going to cause an earthquake, but preparation is still a very important thing.
That's correct.
Okay. So you should, if you don't have a go bag, you should have one. Okay, well, I thought we'd start out by talking about that, just to sort of reassure people who've been, because whenever we hear anything about an earthquake, a lot of time it pops up on social media and people get pretty edgy wondering if it's sort of a harbinger of something. So I want to start with that. But then let's talk overall about the jetties at the mouth of the Columbia River are kind of artificial constructs that were created at some point in the past and really do have created the river that we now know of on the lower river here. So can we talk a little bit about those jetties and there's one on the north and one on the south, and what effect have they had on the river?
Well, they've narrowed it at the mouth so that it flushes sand into deep water. That was the main purpose for constructing these, because the sand shoals that the Columbia River had were so large and so mobile, no one knew where the channel was going to be after a storm. You'd sail your ship in and you'd founder on a sandbar and you'd join the graveyard of the Pacific.
Right, right. Well, so now, if you look at a chart of the Columbia, the channel sort of turns to the toward the southwest. If you were coming out of the river, the channel sort of makes a curve. So is that part of the natural configuration of the river, or was that done intentionally by the Army Corps of Engineers?
I think it's the natural curve of the river. If you look at the charts made by George Vancouver in 1792, you can see that there was a channel on the south side and on the north side, and they kind of shifted towards Cascade Head as they exited into the ocean. And subsequent bathymetric maps show the same thing. So they basically kept the original natural channels.
So these two jetties, which are essentially big, heavy piles of rocks that are almost like a wall that extends out into the ocean, what effect does that have on the surrounding beach area up and down the coast?
Well, it made a big difference, especially on the south side, for the Clatsop Plains side. The jetties basically created the equivalent of a new headland, like North Head.
Right, right.
And so sand washed up against the jetty, and it bridged about a mile and a half of former ocean and sand shoal areas of the broader estuary. And as a result, in almost no time, a new beach was created. There were no dunes associated with it. It's flat as a pancake, and anyone who's ever driven past Battery Russell into the South Jetty notices immediately that everything changes once you leave Battery Russell.
Wow.
That was the original shoreline.
Huh, wow. Well, so now, I was reading something recently. I talked a little bit about it on the Ship Report, but it's way out of my area of expertise about, you know, all the sand on the beaches. Where does that come from?
It comes out of the Columbia River.
Oh.
Yeah, the Columbia, you know, before they put in the dams, was a canyon with roaring water and a whole lot of sand dunes.
Wow.
It all comes from glaciation breaking up the mountaintops to volcanic ash coming out of volcanoes to just general streams breaking down and rotting rock and transporting the rotted remains into the streams. And that all comes out. We technically, Clatsop Plains and the Long Beach Peninsula are the delta of the Columbia River.
Wow.
But because we have the roaring 40s with major storms and surf that's 20 to 30 feet high, were far different environment from, say, the mouth of the Mississippi.
Right.
Which has about 2-foot waves at the biggest.
Wow. Okay. Well, we're kind of getting to the end of the show. So I think I will invite you back to be a guest on the Ship Report to talk more about this, because this is a huge subject, and I would love to talk more with you.
Be glad to.
So thank you so much. My guest has been Tom Horning, geologist Tom Horning from Seaside. You probably have heard of him if you live around here. He's a tremendously knowledgeable person about all this interesting stuff that happens with our beaches. Thanks for being my guest.
You're welcome.
Okay. You've been listening to the Ship Report, the show about all things maritime. I'm Joanne Rideout. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.